an Osho talk. Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt, number 3.
Kyojin was asked by a monk, "What is the way?" He answered, "A dragon singing in a withered tree." The monk said, "I don't know what you're talking about." Kyojin said, "The pupils of the eyes of a skull." Afterwards, another monk asked Sakiso, "What is this dragon singing in a withered tree?" Sakiso said, "It is being invested with joy." The monk then asked, "What is this pupils of a skull?" Sakiso said, "It is the garment of wisdom." Again, a monk asked Sozan what the dragon singing in the withered tree meant. And he answered, "The pulse does not stop." To the question about what the pupils of the skull signified, he answered, "Not quite dry." The monk asked, "Is there anyone who can hear the dragon singing?" Sozan replied, "In all the wide world, there is not a single person who does not hear it." The monk asked whose words they were. Sozan said, "I don't know, but whoever hears them will lose his life." Sozan composed a verse. "The dragon in the withered tree really sees the way. The eyes of the skull above all become clear. Knowledge reaches its limit, and there is nothing to say. Who can distinguish the pure amidst the impure?" One day, a monk came along, and not knowing he was speaking to the master, asked Bokuju the way to the master's room. Bokuju took off his sandal and hit the monk on the head with it. The monk ran off. Then Bokuju called to him, "Osho!" And the monk turned his head. "That's the way to it," Bokuju said, pointing with his finger.
Yunisa. Before I enter into the mystery of Zen, I have received a threat from the old goat Shankaracharya Puri. Rather than answering my question, that in what way burning a living woman, clouds can come over Hyderabad, he has asked the government to arrest me, because I have brought AIDS to India. He is such a genius of stupidity. This is the only campus in the whole world where everybody has to produce a certificate that he has not AIDS. How I can bring AIDS to India? No nonsense should be tolerated. And I had asked him that if he wants a controversy with me, he will have to bring an AIDS negative with him, otherwise he cannot enter the campus. He refuses to bring the certificate. Why? He is afraid. The fear shows many things. In fact, AIDS has been brought into the world by the monks of all the religions who preach celibacy. Celibacy automatically leads people into perversion. If he is really interested, he should get certificate not only for himself, but all the priests of his great temple in Puri. And most of them are bound to be found homosexuals. Because celibacy is such an unnatural imposition that it is bound to turn your life energy into some kind of perversion. Just today, one priest in Pune has been found to have AIDS. But just as all the priests are cunning, he has entered his blood in somebody else's name with somebody else's address. But by the way, the National Institute of Biology recognized, they could recognize only one person, and that is a priest. 46 other persons are also suffering from AIDS. That is not the final limit. But all 46 persons entered their names wrongly, addresses wrongly, and the institute is at a loss where to find them. I am not at all worried about being arrested. On the condition, if all the priests and monks of India are being tested and they can prove that they don't suffer from AIDS, I am willing to remain my whole life in a prison. I say it with absolute certainty because I know the very psychology of homosexuals. AIDS is the ultimate outcome of thousands of years of celibacy being forced on people in the name of religion. In India, there will be more AIDS suffering people than in any other country. More AIDS positives in the priests, monks, Jaina bhikshus, if the government has courage enough, I risk my whole life to remain in prison, but all these people should be checked. This is the only campus, perhaps not only in India, but in the whole world, where you cannot enter without a certificate proving AIDS negative. In what way this old idiot is saying that I have brought AIDS to India? Secondly, he goes on insisting that the untouchables need not go to temples because they are God's only beloved people. If the beloved ones cannot enter into temple, either the gods are wrong or his love is a fallacy, a strategy. At least Shankaracharya, who is saying himself is the head of one of the biggest and ancient most temple with hundreds of priests there, he should lead Harijanas, untouchables, into his temple first. If he is a man of words, then don't be so cunning that untouchables need not enter into temple because God will meet them outside the temple. It is a strange strategy. Lovers meet into intimacy inside. It is a special concession. And he goes on insisting that Harijans should not enter into temples and goes on giving an absolute absurd reason, because you are God's beloved people. Anyone with a small intelligence can see the contradiction. If they are God's people, they should be the first to be allowed and welcomed into temple. And if they are only God's people, then they should be the priests and they should be the Shankaracharyas, not Brahmins. Because Shankaracharya is not saying that Brahmins are God's chosen people, are God's beloved people. This old man either is neurotic or perhaps psychotic. They say that the neurotic is a person who believes that 2 + 2 = 5, and the psychotic person is one who knows that 2 + 2 = 4, but is very much worried about it, why they are 4. So either he is a neurotic or a psychotic, he can choose whatever he is, but he needs certainly a psychiatric treatment. I don't ask the government to arrest him. I want the government to hospitalize him. He is such a hilarious fellow. We would love to welcome here and enjoy the night. It will be a festival time. I have met him only once, 20 years before, in Patna, in a World Hindu Conference. We were both sitting side by side on the platform. Looking at him, I was thinking that perhaps Charles Darwin is right. And he proved it. When I started speaking, I was standing just on the corner of the platform. He became so enraged, so angry, that he tried to take away the microphone from my hand and fell from the platform. Feet high platform and survive. He was the president of the conference and he wanted me not to speak at all. I had to ask 100,000 people who had gathered for the conference that if they want me to speak, they should raise their hands so that the Shankaracharya can see whether people want to hear me or not. When he saw 100,000 hands raised in favor of me, I said to him, "This cancels you as a president. I don't care now about you. The people who are here want to listen to me. You go and jump in any well that you want to." Since then he has been angry. 20 years. if he comes here, it will be a delicious moment for you all. But he has to come with the negative AIDS certificate. And that he cannot bring. Because it will be below his dignity even to ask his blood to be checked. He is such an egoist. But these egoists have been dominating over humanity for centuries. Still they go on dominating. Rather than arresting him, the government has arrested those 200 Harijans who were trying to enter in the Nathdwara temple. The government's act is absolutely unconstitutional. The constitution gives equality to everybody as a birthright. If government wanted to be legal and constitutional, then the people, the priests of Nathdwara, and people like Shankaracharya who were preventing the entry of Harijans, they should be arrested. But what a irony. Those poor 200 Harijans had been arrested to protect the vested interests of the higher, richer Hindu society. I am simply amazed that why Harijans go on remaining part of the Hindu society. For 10,000 years at least, they have been exploited. They are the most exploited and oppressed part of humanity. They should get out of Hinduism. There is no need of any ism. They don't have to be Hindus. It is so undignified that the Hindu scriptures deny them. They cannot read scriptures. The Hindu scriptures deny them. They cannot worship in the temples. The Hindu scriptures even deny them to touch Hindus. Not even their shadows should touch any Hindu. Otherwise, the Hindu has to take a bath to cleanse himself. And still those poor people go on remaining part of Hindu society. It seems to be a certain conspiracy between the Hindu priests and the government, that the priests are out protecting their temples and Harijans who were trying, what harm they could have done, just worshipped in the temple. And if a Hindu temple is not allowing a certain section of society, then certainly that section should separate itself from such humiliation. And Hindus will know only when Harijans separate, because they are 1/4 of the Hindu society and they serve the ugliest causes and purposes. Once they leave the Hindu fold, then the Hindus will understand that who is going to clean their toilets, who is going to kill and murder and butcher animals, who is going to make shoes, who is going to clean the streets, all that is ugly has been imposed on Harijans. In fact, this gives them a great power. Nobody has ever told them that the work you are doing is such that if you deny even for 7 days, the whole India will be stinking. And then let the Brahmins clean the toilets and the Shankaracharyas clean the streets. Just 7 days will be enough for Hindus to learn the lesson. There is no need. Hindus will come to the Harijans and ask them, please enter our temples. Without you, our temples are not temples. Purify our temples by entering them. Otherwise, the whole society will be in such a difficult situation. Brahmins cannot do such things, neither other high class Hindus. Only one man, Gautam Buddha, denied the caste system. And because of denying the caste system, Buddhism has to disappear from India. Another person was Mahavira, who denied the caste system, but he was more diplomatic than Gautam Buddha. He denied the caste system but continued to use the Harijanas for the same purposes as other Hindus. That is the reason why Jainism became a small religion, confined only to the business class. They could not be Brahmins. Brahmins won't allow them. They could not be warriors, the second high class. They would not like to be origins, the fourth class, so only the third class business people, Jainism compromised, and because of this I call Jainism a coward religion. You cannot exist on your own. You have to depend on Hindus. Buddha was absolutely uncompromising. As long as he lived, people gathered around him. His personal charisma, but the moment he was gone, people were butchered, murdered, burnt, or driven to become Sudras. Most of the Sudras, the untouchables, come originally from the followers of Buddha. In Hinduism, there is no possibility to enter into any other class. If you want to enter into Hinduism, you have to be a Sudra. The fourth class is only available. The higher classes are closed for any conversion. I hate to say that Jainism proved a coward religion, because if you are certainly different from Hindus and you don't believe in the caste system, then you should not use it. Then you should find your own shoemakers. Amongst yourself, you should find the toilet cleaners. Without it, you don't matter. You are a dependent shadow of Hinduism. Your revolution is not great enough. It is just in the scriptures that you deny caste system, but in your life, you believe it exactly like Hindus. Because Buddha did not compromise, that is one of the reasons of my respect for the man. Humanity is one. And anybody who wants to create divisions of superiority and inferiority should be put in psychiatric hospitals. He needs good electric shocks to bring him to senses so that he can believe that 2 plus 2 is really 4. These sutras in a way are connected with what I was saying right now. Because the followers of Buddha could not exist in India, they were not allowed to exist. Either they were burnt or forced to be Sudras, are thrown out of the country. But in a way, it proved a blessing in disguise. Buddhism is spread all over Asia. In China, in Mongolia, in Korea, in Taiwan, in Japan, in Burma, in Thailand, in Ceylon, the whole Asia became Buddhist because the refugees who has left India out of fear spread the message of Buddha. But a strange and unbelievable fact that from India, who goes on claiming itself as the birthplace of Gautama Buddha, Buddhism disappeared completely. These anecdotes belong to the heights of Buddhism that it reached. Together with Taoism in China, Gautama Buddha and Lao Tzu both were contemporaries, and both were of the same insight and clarity. They both belonged to the universal sense of humanity. So when Buddhist monks reached China, they were welcomed. There was no conflict between Taoism and Buddhism. This is a strange fact of history. It has never happened anywhere else. Christians had been fighting with Mohammedans, Mohammedans had been fighting with Hindus, Christians had been fighting with Jews. Everywhere, all so-called religions had been conflicting, and it is not only verbal conflict, killing each other in millions. The meeting of Buddhism and Taoism is exceptional, unique. The Taoist monks received the refugee Buddhists with great love and slowly a new phenomenon, a byproduct of the meeting of Buddhism and Taoism, came to birth, that is Zen. These anecdotes have the quality of Gautama Buddha and Lao Tzu both, two greatest human beings which have passed this earth. Their meeting has produced the most significant and the most fragrant religiousness, but it is a little difficult to understand because Buddha spoke in a totally different language, Lao Tzu spoke in a totally different language, and the meeting of both became even more complicated. But it is a joy to enter into this complication and to find out the diamond hidden behind these words. Kaizen was asked by a monk, what is the way? He answered, a dragon singing in a withered tree. I have to explain to you that dragon is a mythological animal. It does not exist. But Kaizen saying that the way is a dragon singing in a withered tree. A tree that has withered and a dragon that does not exist. If you can understand this, you have found the way. Just like the dragon disappear as an ego, and just like a withered tree, drop all your thoughts as the leaves have fallen from the tree. And you will be found, your heart singing a song, and you will find the way to reach to the very heart of existence. There is no God in Buddhism or Taoism. All religions that believe in God are childless. The whole universe is divine. It is only a question of awakening to your divineness. The way does not lead you somewhere else. The way simply leads you into your own heart. The ego is a fiction like a dragon. And your thoughts, your mind, should become a withered tree. Only then you can find hidden inside your life juice. That is your truth, and to find it, one starts singing and dancing with joy because he has found the eternal. The monk said, I don't know what you are talking about. Obviously, the monk was trying to understand the words. He was not able to see that Kaizen has not answered his question, but only symbolically indicated towards it. Neither the dragon exists and the tree is withered. Kaizen said that if you cannot understand this, let us try it another way. The pupils of the eyes of a skull. Now, skulls don't have pupils. Just be a skeleton, utterly silent, eyes closed, be as if you are dead and you have found the way. Just surging inside you a tremendous awareness. The very existence it sings in the cuckoos, it blossoms into the roses, it has flowered into you as human beings, it can flower in you as a Buddha. Hence, I address you as my Buddhas. Perhaps few of you may realize, like a lightning, but few of you may have a little more sleep, but tomorrow we will try again. If you have come here, you are caught in a net. Unless you become a Buddha, don't leave this place. Unfortunately, such places have disappeared from the world. Afterwards, another monk asked Sekiso, "What is this dragon singing in a withered tree?" Sekiso said, "It is being invested with joy." The monk then asked, "What is the pupils of a skull?" Sekiso said, "It is the garment of wisdom." These dialogues will look very absurd, but they are not. They have a totally different logic. It is not Aristotelian logic, which divides things and creates dialectics which culminated in Karl Marx as dialectical materialism. Gautam Buddha, Lao Tzu, and the great masters of both these religions don't believe in dialectics. They believe in oneness. There are no twos. There is nothing other than one. And that one has expressed itself in millions of forms. But the innermost reality is one. Sekuso's saying that it is the garment of wisdom. Again a monk asks Sozan, "What the dragon singing in the withered tree means?" And he answered, "The pulse does not stop." A great answer. The pulse does not stop. Even though the man is dead, he will be pulsating somewhere else. The pulse does not stop. Here he may not be breathing. He may be breathing somewhere else, in some other body, in some other form. Life is an eternity. It is absolutely unacquainted with death. From end to end, it pulsates in different forms, creating different sounds. This is the essence of all the awakened ones. The pulse does not stop. To the question about what the pupils of the skull signified, he answered, not quite dry. He is saying that the master was very humorous. He answered your stupid question, that is enough. It shows his compassion. He is not quite dry. Otherwise, he would have simply refused your stupid question. All questions are stupid. If they have been answered, they have been answered because of love and compassion. But because the truth cannot be put into words, one has to go roundabout. All these answers are simply saying that, please, don't ask the question in words. Bring your quest, bring your silence, and without saying a word, you will hear it. Because it is within you as it is within me. The master does not give anything to the disciple. On the contrary, he takes everything from the disciple and leaves him totally alone in absolute purity, taking away all false ideas, personalities, egos, ideologies, theologies, all kinds of nonsense the master takes away, but he gives nothing. What you find has always been yours. Because of the false, you could not see it. Once the false is understood as false, the truth asserts in its absolute purity and grandeur. The monk asks, is there anyone who can hear the dragon singing? The poor fellow is still clinging with a metaphor. Suzan replied, in all the wide world, there is not a single person who does not hear it. Just one has to be silent. In utter silence, there is nothing but sound. Sound without sound, and a dance without movement. The monk asked whose words they were. Sozan said, "I don't know. But whoever hears them will lose his life." Unless you lose your life, you cannot have the taste of the universal life. Unless you drop all the defenses between you and existence, you remain a dewdrop. You cannot know what it is to be the ocean. You remain a dewdrop on the lotus leaf. Just take a jump. Just below the lotus leaf is the ocean. And once you are in the ocean, certainly you will not be yourself. You will become the whole ocean. Sozan composed a verse, the dragon in the withered tree really sees the way, the eyes of the skull above all become clear, knowledge reaches its limit, and there is nothing to say. Who can distinguish the pure amidst the impure? To the person of realization, there is nothing pure and nothing impure. There is only the real. And the shadow of the real, which he has been clinging up to now. One day a monk came along, and not knowing he was speaking to the master, asked Bokusu the way to the master's room. Bokusu took off his sandal and hit the monk on the head with it. The monk ran off. Then Bokusu called to him, "Osho," and the monk turned his head. That is the way to it, Bokusu said, pointing with his finger. What has happened in this incident? Unless you lose your head, you cannot find your heart. Hitting the head of the monk with his sandal is simply saying, "Please stop thinking. Except thought, nothing is a barrier to truth." But the monk became afraid that this seems to be a madman. "I am asking the way to the master's room and he hits me. It is better to run away from here. He may do something even more nasty." So he ran away. Bokusu called him back. Osho is a very respectful word. It is calling someone almost divine. It is, in essence, so respectful that only a disciple calls a master also. Bokusu called him also, indicating that don't be afraid and don't escape. It is against your dignity. You are to me as respectful as Buddha himself. And saying also, he said, pointing to the room of his own, that is the way to it. But unless you are humble enough, this kind of incident is impossible in this world today. If the master hits with his sandal on your head, you will start fighting with the master. You will not think that he is a man worthy of respect. He seems to be insane. I am simply asking the way and he hits me. But a different world has existed. Bokusu did both the things. First he hit him on the head with his sandal and then he called him also, you are also a master whom you are looking for. But if you are looking for the master, this is the way. Drop your head outside. Be humble, innocent. In your silence, without thought, you may find the Master. Ikkyu has written, to not take it to heart, the real way is one itself as it is. There are not two or three. Just one. A poem by Zengsu, mind, 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 above the path, here on my mountain, gray hair down, I cherish bamboo sprouts, brush carefully by pine twigs. Burning incense, I open a book, mist over flagged stones, rolling the blind, I contemplate moon in the pond. Of my old friends, how many know the way? Zen has contributed a tremendous beauty to words. Moon in the pond. Of my old friends, how many know the way? And the way is simple, above the mind, the path. Just you leave the mind aside. Here we are doing it every day, putting the mind aside. And the door opens. And suddenly you are in your innermost space. That is your treasure. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, is not everyone on the way? Old friends and new, whether we know it or not, Manisha, there is no way. Everyone is either a Buddha awake or a Buddha asleep. Between sleep and awakening, there is no path. Each day in the morning when you wake up, have you ever thought when sleep ends and awakening starts? There is not even a small distance between sleep and waking. What is true in ordinary world is also true in the ultimate experience. You are asleep, Buddhas. The asleep Buddha is called Bodhisattva. Buddha in essence. Buddha in the seed. Let the rains come. Let the seed disappear in the soil. And green leaves sprouting and the flowers blossoming. There is no distinction. Everybody is either awake or asleep. That's why I call you all Buddhas. What does it matter that somebody wakes up today, somebody woke up yesterday, somebody is waiting for tomorrow? The Buddhahood is there whether you are asleep or awake. We will go on trying, pulling your leg, hitting on your head. In every device, the essential part is how to make you awake, really awake. A pillar of consciousness. Another question she has asked, do you call us Buddhas as Bokusu called the monk in this story, Osho, to remind us of the way? not of the way Manisa, but to remind you of yourself. The way is always a long journey. There is no need of any way. You can just here now be awake without traveling on any way. I don't talk about the way. I talk about awakening this very moment like lightning, a thunderbolt. And I don't think that if you decide to sleep a little longer, there is any harm. Yes, Manisa, I call you all Buddhas in the same sense as Bhukkhusu called the monk Osho. I love you and I respect you, whether you are awake or asleep, that is a very small matter. It is so small that before meditation we will laugh a little. He Donatelli, South Ritsokola, you Atapula, your shades down when you kiss your wife. I saw you last night. I saw everything. Ha ha. Laughs Donatelli. The joker is on you. I was not home at the last night. The doctor comes out of Rizzoli's bedroom and says, frankly, Mrs. Rizzoli, I don't like the way your husband looks at all. I don't either. She replies, but he is nice to the kids. Big Mrs. Bertha Bellini gets into a taxi one night in downtown Rome. After riding a while, she suddenly realizes that she has forgotten her purse and has no money to pay the fare. The meter reads $10 when Bertha cries, "Hey, Mr. Driver, you are better stop. I know cannot pay you." "Ah, that is all right," says the cabbie. "I will just pull down into this a little street, just in the back seat with you. Take off your panties." "Wait," interrupts Mrs. Belloni. "Mister, you are gonna get a bad deal. My panties only cost 49 cents. Brian Bal Vardi is an experienced young man. He has heard that a good way to arouse sexual desire in a girl who is not responding to the usual forms of wooing is to place her hand directly on one's organ. He parks with his date in the local lover's lane, but after an hour has only a sisterly kiss to show for his efforts. So Brian decides to put his new technique into action. He takes the girl's hand and places it firmly on his dick. The response is instantaneous. The girl shouts at him with the longest stream of abuse he has ever heard. Stunned, he tries to reply, but she won't listen and demands to be taken home. When they reach her parents' home, she starts shouting at him again. Finally, she runs out of breath and says, "Well, do you have anything to say for yourself?" "Yes, I have." Brian grimaces painfully. "Please let go." Close your eyes, no movement of the body, just become frozen so that you can enter into yourself. This silence also This silence, the Buddha, deeper, deeper, deeper. Deeper you go, more oceanic becomes the experience. The dewdrop slips from the lotus leaf disappears in the ocean. This is our eternal reality. This is our divineness. There is no other God than this experience. There is no other prayer than this tremendous silence, this peace, this ecstasy, to make it more deeper. Also, Nivedana, relax, just as if you have died. The body may go on breathing, but you remain in, pull yourself as much as possible inwards. The more you are in, the more the Buddha is away. At the very center of your being, you are the ultimate experience of being a Buddha. Drink it. Let it sink into every fiber and cells of your body, mind, carry it 24 hours within you, just like a silent flame, showing you the path. Reminding you that you are the goal, not the way. The God, not the devotee. The sought, not the seeker. Nivedana. You all can come back, and for a few seconds, just sit like the Buddha. In your grandeur, in your grace, blissful is the night. With so many Buddhas breathing together the same sound, listening together the same music, feeling together the very heartbeat of the universe. Except this, there is no religiousness. And this religiousness is neither Christian, nor Hindu, nor Mohammedan. It is freedom from all boundaries. It knows no limit. Be unlimited. Be the ocean. Can we celebrate the gathering of so many Buddhas?